90.1 FM जो कि बर्नबी ब्रिटिश कोलंबिया में स्थित है।
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded December 11th, 2024. Well, as much as the Allied powers, the governments, news conglomerates, and social media companies have done to throw sand in the eyes and stoppers in the ears of the public, it's becoming more difficult to ignore the Holocaust in Gaza. Despite their best efforts, some semblance of truth is managing to penetrate the electronic wall separating our necessary fictions from the grim realities of what is happening over there in our names. And over here, too, David Rovics has done more to document the crimes of our times not appearing properly in the pages of Time and the New York Times than any three ordinary anarchists, and set it to music, too. Sadly, David's balladeering genius is not for everyone, especially, it seems, the near-monopolistic music platform Spotify. That entity has effectively disappeared his recent album, Notes from a Holocaust, as though the documenting in 20 songs of the horror that is Gaza and the stories of the people experiencing it had never existed. Causes one pause to wonder just what else has Spotify muted. David Rovics in the first half, and Greenpeace and Sea Shepherd Conservation Society co-founder Captain Paul Watson has inhabited a cage in Greenland since last summer. The inveterate privateer for the whales, dolphins, and all the ocean's creatures was arrested there on an international warrant issued by whaling nation Japan. It seeks Watson's extradition, and the deadline for the Danish court's decision could be as soon as next week. Charlie Humphrey runs the Paul Watson Foundation podcast, and he and the rest of the crew of Neptune's Navy are calling all hands. Charlie Humphrey and keeping Paul Watson out of Japan's dock in the second half. But first, frequently touring singer-songwriter and host of the podcast This Week with David Rovics, David Rovics and Spotify denying Notes from a Holocaust. Welcome back to the program, David.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great to be back.
Well, it's always great to speak with you, of course. And you've been traveling around, of course, as ever. But, David, before getting to the perfidious Spotify, while you and the Ministry of Culture are on holiday hiatus now, we know that after the show is before the show. So what's next in the new year on your schedule, your touring schedule?
We will be actually up in British Columbia in late April, and then we're also going to be touring around the West Coast and Mexico and the Northeast of the U.S. and also England and Scotland and Australia, all in the first half of 2025.
And that's much the same as you did last year. I mean, as I say, when you're an inveterate traveler, you're on the road. I don't know how many days out of the year you're in many different countries. Is there an identifiable trend from country to country, or is everybody equally appalled and appalled by the same sorts of things they're seeing?
Well, I think there's generally people are appalled, but how much information people have and what kind of information they're exposed to. I mean, I'm not, like, as far as like the genocide of Gaza and, you know, that Israel has been engaging in it for over a year now. I'm playing a lot of gigs that are related to groups that are organizing against that, who are organizing protests and all that. But also, you know, a lot of folks who are not involved with that. I'm just constantly impressed by how many folks there are in the Western world who are not hearing about the genocide the way that many of us are, who, you know, watch Al Jazeera or consume non-Western news sources, or, you know, are following people on X or Instagram that are much more directly showing us what's going on over there. But the Western media, you know, from French to German to English to Canadian to Australian to American, it's all just horrible pro-Israeli propaganda. So there's a lot of confusion out there about, you know, what's going on, how bad it is. But certainly among the people that are paying attention, there's a general atmosphere of despondency, you know, I would say, much more than anything else. at this point.
Well, I was remiss, David, in the introduction and not mentioning how much writing you do and your essays. I just talked about the music, but at davidrovics.com and at davidrovics.substack.com, you can find David's writings as well. And on this Spotify, you wrote the article, Spotify, Wrapped, Robbed, and Censored. The fact of being disappeared like this is maybe even the scariest part of this whole thing, David. You say that, again, in that article, that you, the reader, are reading the words of a person who could disappear at any moment. Well, we're seeing that in places like Great Britain, where the habeas corpus was first invented. Journalists and activists are being snatched out of their homes for committing no crime other than speaking out about this great crime of our time going on in Palestine.
Yeah, and then it's just that being ignored by the press, or at least by the main press outlets that most people still think of as the press and would be looking for. It wasn't covered on BBC, and so did it really happen? I mean, is it really newsworthy that these people must have done something for it not to be considered newsworthy that these journalists are being brutally arrested by masked, heavily armed police forces off the streets of London, But there's just these assumptions people make, if it's not being covered, there must be a reason for it. Nobody's covering the fact that this artist has had his album deleted from Spotify. He must have said something really offensive. I mean, he must be really a terrorist sympathizer in some really bad way. Otherwise, this wouldn't just be happening in this, in a great democracy like this. But of course, these things are happening, and they are just brutally arresting people that just for stating the obvious on Twitter or Facebook. And they really did delete an entire album in just because I'm expressing sentiments that are considered to be disagreeable by the British government, and particularly the crime that me and these other journalists and various others are committing. That seems to be the problem here, is we're violating Section 12 of the UK's Terrorism Act of 2000, which specifically says if you say anything that's considered to be praising a proscribed organization, then you are breaking the British law and could face up to 14 years in prison.
Yeah, this Section 12, the story that, and there's several, but the story that really sticks out in my mind is Sarah Wilkinson, who is a longtime activist. And if you, as you mentioned, people following this on Twitter, I haven't watched even Al Jazeera for years. I've given up on all of that media, but I get a lot of my news online, and she delivers gut punch after gut punch of what's going on. She's got a lot of contacts in Palestine and Gaza, especially. She's been doing this for an awfully long time. She's 61 or 2 years old, as I recall. And these guys, you remember that there was that thing in the States a few years ago. I don't know if it still goes on, but it was called swatting for people with, for either for revenge or for just fun, would send phone in the SWAT team and the American, special weapons, something tactical team. And they would show up, as everybody has seen on television, and these wearing balaclavas and carrying machine guns and battering rams and all the rest of it. This is how these guys showed up in England to this woman's suburban house early in the wee hours, as they are wont to do. But they also put her, you remember Freddie Gray, and I think me and you have talked about Freddie Gray, what happened to him in Baltimore years ago. They chucked her in the back of this van, Freddie Gray style, handcuffed, and took her for a little bouncy ride as well. The 60-something-year-old woman who never lifted a finger in anger against anyone, as far as I'm aware.
With her hands tied behind her back and no seatbelt, just like with Freddie Gray, really. I mean, just a terrible, treatment, and they were clearly driving her all over London, not going in a direct way to the police station, driving her all over London in order to batter her in the back of this wagon. Really, really brutal stuff.
In Britain, the sense of fear must be growing by the day, as they've been foremost in this. Richard Medhurst, the journalist, not getting bounced around, but getting the treatment and still essentially gagged. Kit Clarenberg was the first one that I read about. He from the Gray Zone fame and other things too. And then Asa Winstanley from Electronic Intifada. And in his case, they just came and booted in his door, took all of his computers and his phone and everything and left. They didn't arrest him. They didn't charge him, nothing. They just came in and looted his house of all of it, all of his communication capability, and then waltzed out.
Yeah, and the same kind of thing is happening in so many other countries. I mean, recently, Professor Ben Mansky, I've been in touch with my old friend there at George Mason University, who has been the advisor, faculty advisor to Students for Justice in Palestine, which has been basically banned from the campus with no due process, with two women, essentially young women, students being essentially expelled from the university for being implicated in some kind of graffiti for which there's no proof that they were involved. So, I mean, it's really, you know, this kind of crazy over-the-top stuff is happening all over the place, certainly, you know, multiple countries. And the connection with all in all these cases is Israel, you know, and this is something that you hear people talking about, you know, like, wow, when it comes to Israel, you know, There seems to be suddenly all these really harsh consequences involving speech that don't seem to be a big deal when it comes to so many other issues that we can mention. People are generally shocked at how much influence Israel seems to have in the politics of whatever country we're talking about. That's something I keep on running into. And that's very understandable why I keep running into that, why people feel that way. It is shocking.
Well, and you mentioned the campus protests. I mean, that just seems like years ago when it was just this past year, the summer especially, and into the fall of the preschool period. Now it seems to have been Occupy itself. It's something that was it even real? Did it even happen? And yet the students that were involved are now facing out of the glare of the media, or at least what glare there was when it was going on, are facing consequences that could cost them their careers or even more.
Mm-hmm. Really harsh consequences, and it's still ongoing for anybody involved with protest of any kind when it comes to this issue and on campuses in this country. Still ongoing.
Well, it's, you know, I guess when you're within something, you can get a warped sense of progress or of the situation at hand. Being close to the protest movement over the last year, going to the demos, you're surrounded by people that share a common interest. You see the demos grow and people get more committed. You think, oh, maybe we're making some progress. Watching the wars going on in the Middle East, the resistance being waged, you think, oh, well, maybe there's some progress being made there in Yemen and in Lebanon. But this last week, it seems to have reversed everything. And the situation, as it stood last week compared to today, it seems worlds apart. Are you sensing this as well?
I mean, no, actually. I never had any affection for the Assad regime. And I'm not surprised at how fast it collapsed. And I have not seen a protest movement growing. What I've seen is protest movements shrinking. And what I see, you know, and I hope that for some other people somewhere else in the world it's different, you know. But what I see in the countries I go to, in the Anglo countries, you know, those are primarily the countries I'm spending my time in, you know, the U.S., Canada, Australia, Britain, you know, Ireland, Scandinavia, you know, other countries where they speak English, you know, Scandinavia a lot. What I'm seeing in especially in the Anglo countries, are movements that are in some cases sustained, where there's still a weekly protest of great size in cities like London, you know, still happening. But in most countries and most cities, the protest sizes are decreasing over time, and it's very discouraging. And it's not this is not what happened, you know, during Vietnam, for example, as far as other anti-war genocidal wars that had a reaction, you know, of this kind or huge reaction, you know, globally. And those protests grew over time, you know, and these are not. And I think there's a lot of explanations for why that's the case. You know, I'm not sure what, you know, which ones are more powerful than others in terms of what explains this situation. There's a lot of differences between now and you know, 55 years ago. But it's discouraging and it's not hopeful.
So it's gone from bad to worse since last week. I mean, maybe that proves my point exactly, because here in Victoria, there has been every single week since middle of October of 23, the people have come out, and I've gone to almost all of those, and I've watched enough so that, you know, it's usually a couple hundred people. You've been to it yourself, so you get an idea of the tenor and the mixture of the kind of people there, but enough that I recognize faces, and I've been seeing in the last months new faces arrive as well. The numbers still seem to ebb pretty much within the, you know, 150 to 200 number every week. I mean, whatever the weather. But when we walk through the streets after, you know, mustering at the legislature building, I'm seeing more and more positive reaction from the passersby. They don't come and join the march necessarily, but I'm seeing much more positive reactions from them. And this is what lent me to think, oh, we're finally, you know, making some kind of headway, be it small. I mean, especially after an entire year of this. But given that the media has been so good at keeping these stories out of the headlines, it seemed like it was an advance to me. But yeah, maybe I'll reassess my depression and think I should have been depressed the whole time rather than just being depressed now. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with David Rovics. David, we're talking around, and we haven't got to yet really, but his recent article, Spotify, Wrapped, Robbed, and Censored, about what Spotify, that huge conglomerate company on the internet, the funnel of so much music that people hear today, have erased his album, Notes from a Holocaust, and who knows how many other albums. You can find David at davidrovics.com. Sorry, David, I stepped on you there. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, we're living in a pretty dystopian situation where our information and our is being controlled by a handful of massive corporations that are completely unaccountable, and that's true for all the people who get their information or don't get their information about what's happening in Gaza, and you know, it's true for whatever kind of music people might be looking for out there in the world. You know, it's probably going to be on the main dominant platform, Spotify, and if it's not there, they'll just assume it doesn't exist. And that's how it is with YouTube and other platforms too. People talk about alternative platforms, and it's great to have lots of alternatives, but people who talk about that in this context are missing the point, because the point is there are certain platforms that are dominant, and until that changes, you know, and as long as they are basically, you know, sort of controlling the discourse, and their algorithms are what are controlling who hears new music or doesn't, and which music they hear and all that. You know, they have this massive outsized impact, and they can decide at any time who vanishes from the public view and who doesn't, you know.
Well, this is like the YouTube conundrum too, and I see a lot of people doing progressive news and such with platforms on YouTube, and everybody disses it, you know, like the weather, but nobody does anything about it. But if they say, well, we're pulling off of YouTube, they're looking at losing 80% or more of what income they can generate.
Yeah, it makes or breaks people's careers, and also whether anybody hears about what they're trying to do as journalists or musicians or whatever else. You know, if they had a following on a given platform, that following isn't guaranteed to continue to exist in any way, because it's not really their following. It's determined by these corporations, you know, and whether your so-called followers on a platform actually even see any of the content you put out, it's all just dependent on how the platform wants to run things, how the corporation wants to run things.
And people on YouTube, they've had their whole catalogs wiped out for no explanation as well. You know, they're all their Lots. Shows. Chris Hedges, of course, comes to mind, but there's others yep. as well. Well, let's talk then about Spotify. You know, I Spotify, Neil Young, Joe Rogan, that's about as much as I can remember about Spotify. You and I have talked about it, and you've had a history, let's say, with Spotify, taking issue with a lot of their practices, especially as it affects artists that aren't Neil Young or the very, very top echelon. You talk about this Spotify Wrapped day. What does that mean? What is it?
Well, it's every year, the beginning of December, Spotify sends out notifications to all the people that use the platform as listeners or as artists to tell them about their listening habits or their the listening habits of people that listen to them if they're artists. So it's just an excuse for a lot of people to talk about Spotify at the beginning of December every year, you know, and for the press to do articles about Spotify and to, you know, mention things that they learn in the Spotify Wrapped presentation, and which when it comes to the overall picture of Spotify, will, you know, you'll be reminded that, you know, Bad Bunny and Taylor Swift are still massively popular and that kind of thing. But for exactly, but for the rest of us, it's still, you know, maybe even of more interest, because we're not talking about the overall trends, but we're talking about the trends for each of us as an artist or as a listener. So it certainly hooks people in, and it's interesting to find out, you know, who you're listening to, or who you're, you know, that most of your listeners as an artist are in a given country or gender or age group or whatever, you know, all that stuff that's what Spotify Wrapped is. So for me, it was just an excuse to talk about, well, the fact that my Spotify Wrapped presentation was basically completely inaccurate, because I've already been told, I had already been told earlier in the year by Spotify that Notes from a Holocaust had gotten 20,000 views or whatever it was, and then they're telling me at the end of the year on the Spotify Wrapped thing that my second album from 2024 was the most viewed album I put out that got 8,000 views, you know, or whatever streams, you know, but that wasn't true, and they already told me that. So, you know, they're lying about these end of the, I mean, they've just not only erased the album from existence, but they've erased it from history as well, you know, which is mm-hmm. very Orwellian or Kafka-esque or both. And yeah, one other thing I just want to point out as far as the Spotify thing is that this is just part of a campaign that is being waged against me, you know, and, you know, this is just one aspect of it, you know, and it's which is, I think, the most sort of interesting and alarming thing about the whole story. You know, you can just, you know, point to any platform you want to, and you can see what's going on that one. Like on Facebook, I'm unable to use the invite feature, and it's clearly I'm banned from it. They never tell me that, but I can't invite anyone to events, whether it's my event or anybody's event. You know, like, and this is, you know, Twilio. I can't use Twilio. They've banned me from being able to send text messages, you know, to multiple people like I have been able to do before. You know, it's just whatever it seems I'm trying to do, there's somebody out there noticing and trying to stop me from being able to do it.
And it's YouTube really, as well?
On YouTube, it's just video, just the usual videos getting, you know, banned for having graphic content, but that's not the same. I haven't noticed any real targeting going on. They're not taking down all my material on YouTube. I mean, the algorithms have been terrible for a long time on YouTube, and I get very little attention there. But there's no overt, other than that, there's no overt, like, banning of material so far.
No, I get your Twitter feed, but, you know, pretty rarely. I don't know how much you actually use that. Do you notice that Twitter is restricted as well?
I don't notice that in particular. I just know that, you know, I've never gotten the kind of traction on Twitter that some, you know, accounts get for whatever reason, you know, but, you know, so I if I'm being suppressed, it's, you know, it's never stopped. So I wouldn't know if it's, you know.
And what about Substack? Now, this seems, do you believe this is the last refuge, as many hoped, or is there any indication that the same kinds of policies are coming to Substack too?
Yeah, no, nothing that I've in particular experienced on Substack. But the thing is that with all these platforms, if they're functioning in the United States, then they're all subject to being told what to do by American intelligence agencies, and they're all subject to gag orders for, you know, whatever they do or don't do, and you know, they can't talk about it as far as giving access to stuff. But as far as, like, you know, deciding to shadow ban or you know, do these kinds of things that might be actually noticeable by somebody, you know, I haven't seen Substack doing that kind of thing. I mean, but, you know, where it's really obviously stuff is going on is Spotify and Facebook.
Did they ever get back to you and say, oh, sorry, somebody, you know, didn't carry the one or what?
No, they never explain anything. There's never a notification or an explanation. And when I and people that are members, you know, pay their $10 a month to get Spotify, you know, we're writing them and trying to find out what their explanation was for the removal of the album. Everybody, including me, you know, the artist, has been told that the distributor changed their metadata, which is just nonsense. I mean, why would they do that? And it's also nonsense when you look into it further and you realize that in some sort of, like, you know, there's all these little echoes of the web out there. When you're looking for Spotify, David Grovick's Notes for a Holocaust, you'll come up with a lot of different, you know, shadows of Spotify somewhere out there. I don't know, you know, how it all works. But, you know, you'll come up with my page with the album, and you'll see the cover of the album and the name and the tracks, but they're all sort of grayed out, so you can't play any of them. But in one version that you'll find out there on the web, on Spotify somewhere, it's a list of all the tracks except for track number 15, which is Song for the Houthi Army, and that track is completely gone, including the title. And, you know, when I, understanding Section 12 of the UK's Terrorism Act, as I do, because I'm, you know, I know Sarah and lots of other people have been getting arrested, and it's, you know, I'm keeping up on this stuff. And, you know, that particular song probably violates Section 12 of the UK's Terrorism Act, unlike other songs, which, you know, people may complain about, and they may think that they sound, you know, anti-Semitic or whatever they may say. But, you know, the song for the Houthi Army clearly praises the actions of Ansar Allah unequivocally. And the chorus is thank you, you know, for the Houthi Army. For, you know, well, so it's like it is pretty unequivocal praise, and I'm thanking them for their services, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that song is violating the law as far as I can tell, and that's why it's gone.
Well, so is Spotify doing you a favor then and keeping you out of prison? Or if are you still liable, you think, if you go back to England?
Oh, yeah, because the song's out there on other platforms, and I'll be singing it live every day, you know.
So, more importantly, David, if I play that song on the break and I go to England, am I going to be in trouble?
Well, that's an open question, right? Because, I mean, you know, you just, all you have to do is repost something, and that makes you guilty, and as we've found already. So I think just you playing that song on your show is, you know, if anybody hears it in England, that probably means you're violating the law there.
Well, I've been to England twice. I guess I can forego the that green and pleasant land if I have to for the rest of my days. So I'll play that song, Song for the Houthi Army, at the break to take us into the second half, where I'll be joined by Charlie Humphreys, and we're going to talk about another political prisoner, Captain Paul Watson of the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, previously of Sea Shepherd and previously of Greenpeace, in jail in Greenland awaiting extradition to Japan to stand what passes for trial in Japan for his anti-whaling activities in that famously whaling nation. Thanks a lot, David, for coming on again. We're out of time, of course, much sooner than we run out of topic. I do look forward to your touring back up here again. Will you come to Victoria in the new year?
I believe I'll be there in April. Hope to see folks there.
Well, let us know where you're going to play. We'll see if we can get people out. and come to the demo, because I have a feeling that there'll still be a Saturday demo on the lawn of the Victoria legislature, the British Columbia legislature buildings in downtown Victoria, because this doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon. Thanks a lot, David, for coming on. Eh?
Thank you, Chris.
Escape the narrative. Guerrilla Radio.
The world's trade passes by here. So much of it goes through Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, in the port of Gaza, no ships can arrive and not a boat can leave. While every day hundreds are dying beneath the rain of missiles fired from the air. Millions of starving Palestinians on the run, being slaughtered